Welcome to Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined for a very special edition by Monsignor Paul Tai, who serves as the Secretary for the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, which is a dicastery of the Roman Curia. This particular council was first established by Pope Pius XII in 1948, and later given wider jurisdiction and new names by successive popes, most recently by Pope John Paul II on June 28, 1988. The Pontifical Council for Social Communications is responsible for using the various forms of the media in spreading the gospel. I had the opportunity to speak with Monsignor Tai in the offices of the council located at the Vatican.
Thank you so much for your time, Monsignor.
No problem. Delighted that you're here with us.
What brings you, a priest from the diocese located in Ireland, here to the Vatican?
Well, it's a long story, and I'm not sure I know all of the story, but in broad terms, I suppose as a seminarian, I lived here in Rome and studied here in Rome. I also came back and did postgraduate work here, so I spent most of the 80s in Rome. I loved the city, loved Italy. I never took a real interest in the Vatican, per se. There was a certain half-hearted invitation to me at one stage, would I be interested in working with the Vatican? That didn't seem to me to be what being a diocesan priest was about. So at the time, I dismissed it fairly rapidly. I'm not sure how seriously the invitation was intended anyway. But subsequently, I went back to Ireland. My background is law. I did civil law in Ireland originally. I subsequently did moral theology, and I ended up working very much on the area of bioethics, on the interface of law and morality. Through that, I got involved in the public forum, being involved in public forum, public policy debates, and then also background work with journalists. And that led to an increasing engagement in the communication side of the church's ministry. In 2004, Archbishop Martin of Dublin asked me if I would take the communications office in hand, and it had been a very strong office, and then for various reasons people had moved on to other things and it just needed a renewal. So the first thing I did was employed a professional journalist and handed the job over to her. But I stayed on as a kind of a theological resource and also set up a parallel office for public affairs. And from there, I got a phone call 3.5 years ago to tell me that I'd been nominated Secretary of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications and that I could start in a week's time. So that's literally how I had no idea that this was in the offing. I was told at the time that if there was something that I was aware of myself that would make it very difficult for me to accept, that would be fine, but the fact that my parents were 80 would not be sufficient. So they had anticipated my obvious difficulty. And I came here and arrived here, as I said, 3.5 years ago. It's been a most interesting experience. I realised the more I'm here how lucky I am. I have a wonderfully collaborative and wise boss, Archbishop Celli. We work very well together. He wasn't a specialist in communications either, so we've been learning. A lot of the work of the council is really not so much focused on the Vatican itself, but focused on the church globally. And the church globally has extraordinary rich resources in terms of commitments that are made by churches to communication. So that in different parts of the world means TV stations, in some parts it's more radio, in other parts of the world it's print media. But I suppose what everybody throughout the church in the various forms of communications ministry has to look at is this new so-called digital cultural revolution. And that's making all of us have to reevaluate what we're doing in terms of communications. There's a technological reason for that. It means that often the kind of material that we produce now will be available in a range of formats. But more importantly, we always say that the revolution or the transformation is not primarily about technology. It's actually a change in the communications culture, how we think, how we reflect, how we share ideas. And again, a lot of our communications activities are not just about giving information, it's about creating community. And we're trying to understand the dynamics, the processes of what's happening in communications so that the church can very effectively insert itself into this greater dialogue and debate and communication and formation of community that's happening at the moment. So a lot of our work is really helping people who are on the ground to reflect together on the challenges and particularly on the opportunities that new media offer to us. And I think it's important to highlight the opportunities. For many years, we might have said, look, it's very difficult for us to get a good hearing from the mainstream media. We also had our own media, but our own media often was a niche market which didn't reach the general public. We now have this situation where there are thousands and more than thousands and thousands of people who are also producers of media, mm-hmm. people who are blogging, people who are communicating in all sorts of ways. And if we can feed them and give them the good information, the good resources, we now have a way of reaching a very wide public, a public that isn't either simply sitting back listening to us, but is also itself going to become an advocate for our positions if we can convince them. So there are huge opportunities available to the church, because the church is already a social network. That's the way we've always been. Mm-hmm. The church is the Church of Rome, which is a point of principle, a point of unity, but the church is also the vibrant local communities who are interlinked in all sorts of ways, through personalities, through religious orders that are in different. So I always think in many ways we are the original networked society. Mm-hmm. And I think there are opportunities for the church to be able to work with the new revolution in the culture of communications in a way that allows us to communicate much more effectively.
You spoke of areas such as print and traditional, dare I say it, broadcast entities, yeah. whether it's radio yeah. or television. All of them are blending together in their expression through this use of the internet. They all essentially look the same in some ways on the internet. What is your thought as a leader in this pontifical Council for Social Communications of how the church is going to use this?
We have two insights that we've garnered, not on our own, but with the help of the people who are doing the work. And the phenomenon that you're describing of everything blending, the technical term people use is convergence. Mm. So the website of a journal, of a newspaper, will have video material, it'll have audio material. Mm-hmm. A radio website will have pictures and it'll have text. So the distinctions change in some ways. The two points that we would want to make about it would be, I think the first one is to say we need to see that there's going to be far greater need for cooperation, for collaboration. One thing that becomes very important in this is that good content can be shared globally. We don't need everybody locally producing the same content. Mm-hmm. So there's a very real need for us to build structures of collaboration and cooperation between those who are operative in the area of Catholic communications. That's not always easy, because very often, and this is the thing I've observed as I travelled, is very often the people who have made the church's communications ministry come alive have done so by virtue of being very strong people. People who've made a radio station happen when others said it couldn't be done. People who've got a newspaper working when they were told it couldn't be done. People who, if they were waiting for a committee at a diocesan or international level to come up with a plan for a TV station, would still be waiting. They pushed ahead and they did it. Mm-hmm. And that entrepreneurial and strong sense doesn't always necessarily make for great cooperation with other people. And so one of the things is we have to understand as a culture is, look, we harden all as it is at times to do this together. It's worth it. It's important to do it together because we can achieve great things working together. Mm. The other thing that is becoming very clear for us is that in the past, very often, we had a sense of the microphone was our fundamental image of communications. Mm-hmm. So radio was a more effective microphone. TV was a microphone that allowed people to see us as well. The internet, we began to think, was another type of microphone that got us even into more different parts of the world. But the fundamental thing about a microphone is it's a passive image. We're talking, they're listening. Mm-hmm. That's not the way of new media. New media, people are talking, they are listening, but then they're taking that, they're sharing it, they're commenting it, they're editing it, they're moving it around. Mm-hmm. So it's a much more dynamic context. So one of the things we've had to think about is to make sure that we reflect on that, that we're not simply speaking. The other great thing is that we're learning is new media allow us to monitor the conversation of so many people. Mm-hmm. And all good communications begins with listening. It allows us to know if I say something here and then I can tomorrow see the comments that are coming on it, I can realise the things that were due to misunderstandings. And maybe the next time I speak, I can avoid some of those misunderstandings by rephrasing what I have to say. Mm-hmm. So one can listen very effectively and anonymously in ways that help your communication. The final point I would say, and this is the one that I think we're also concerned of, is a TV had its own kind of way of, you said one thing for TV, you said it differently on radio, and if you were writing, you put it another way. With the gradual movement of everybody towards the internet, as that's kind of the portal that unites, there's a new language emerging. And that new language is a language that has to be short, quick, impactful. So we have to learn this new language. And for the church, it also means we're very committed to the language of theology, which is a very important, I've given my life to it, discipline where the precision of your words is very important, the tradition and the meaning of what you're trying to say is very important, but it's not necessarily a language that will make a lot of sense to somebody who hasn't been schooled in the same traditions. Mm-hmm. We have the language of our liturgy, which is a magnificent language that engages the imagination, that's powerful, that's beautiful, but it again probably has to be explained to a whole generation. What we see is that in the internet, in the digital arena, there's another language we have to learn, which is a language that makes an impact, that engages people emotionally, that attracts their attention. And maybe somebody's gliding past, they're clicking through, they'll click out as quickly as they arrived, mm-hmm. if there's not something that captures their attention fairly immediately. The way is what we see, we need an entry level language, a language that we use in the digital culture that can capture people's attention, but that then invites them into a community and into participation where they learn the beautiful language of the liturgy, where they learn the language of theology.
So many of those who have began their diving into the digital sea, those pioneering founder bloggers and website entrepreneurs, essentially, did that because many of them felt that a conversation or a dialogue wasn't happening, or information that they were seeking and wanted to communicate, they could not find anywhere else, so they wanted to provide that.
Yeah.
And as you said, they're very strong-minded, intelligent people. Yet there can be a danger if they have not the appreciation sometimes of those who are listening and may not appreciate where they're at unless they do have that, how do I want to say it, that guidance of the church. In some cases, they even resent any form of guidance, even if it comes from the church.
Yeah, I think we have to stepping outside even the church arena. If you look at the internet in general, mm-hmm. it's a great place for enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. It's a great place for people who have strong passions. Be that about motor cars, be that about political theories, or be that about the church and theology. It's also a place that puts a lot of a premium on self-expression. Many of the people who found the internet as a great place were people who maybe had felt disenfranchised, that they weren't able to get their thoughts published, mm-hmm. and sometimes maybe for good reason.
Sure.
But there's a great enthusiasm about there, and there's a very strong sharing of opinion. And we're not going to delude ourselves. We're not going to control that. Mm-hmm. And that we've been told that very clearly. So even if we were trying to control it, we'd have to recognise we're not. But what we are interested in is encouraging people who self-identify as Catholic bloggers to realise that part of our tradition is that people who speak to each other, even on questions where they have strong feelings and where they have strong feelings of disagreement of others, must find a way of speaking about that that respects our ecclesial communion. Mm-hmm. And that cuts both ways. That means that if I'm the person who's convinced that everybody else is a heretic, I have to realise I can disagree strongly with their views, I can argue with the substance, but I shouldn't be targeting them as people. Mm-hmm. If I'm coming from the other end and I'm inclined to think that I'm the only one really has a proper intellectual appreciation of what faith is, and that these people, these morons, were holding on to old views. Mm-hmm. I have to realise, no, maybe I have to be self-critical, and I have to aim at engagement. And I think that's important for two reasons. One is, we are a community that tries to speak the truth in love. The love must be obvious. Nobody's been asked not to speak the truth, but we have to do so in a way that, with love, that respects the other person. And also, if I'm trying to convert or change another person, just firing insults is not actually going to be effective. It's only going to reinforce them in their position. And that's one, and the internal side of the dynamic. Mm-hmm. Second thing is, if I'm a young person, or not necessarily just a young person, and I'm clicking through the Catholic blogosphere, and all I can find is bickering, dissent, crankiness, and obviously that's not all you're going to find, but if that's what I'm encountering to begin with, it's not going to attract me. I'm not going to see this as testifying to the life-giving message of Christ. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be interested in getting involved in something that seems to be all about. There's enough of that in so many ways of life. So I think we need to be, in our conversations, we need to be respectful of one another. And we need also to remember that our conversation is being monitored by people who are making a judgment about us, our church, and about Christ on the basis of what they witness in our behavior.
Yeah, as you're speaking, I'm recalling the wisdom of St. Catherine of Siena and the Dialogues, where she speaks about, through the Dialogues that the Father is speaking to her, saying that there can be a lot of good intent in someone's heart, but if it's not exhibited in virtue, if virtue isn't displayed, then it's not of God. It may be a good intention, but it may not necessarily be of the Spirit. And that can be very dangerous, can it?
Yeah, no, I think it's very clear. I think one of the things that I was pleased about the meeting we had yesterday with bloggers mm-hmm. was that very often it's good that people meet each other. Mm-hmm. And then, because it's easy to attack an anonymous name or an anonymous kind of website. It's not so easy to attack when I've met the person. Because I meet the person, I realize that they have a story, that they have a truth, and maybe I come to more to understand. The more I understand the person, I see where they're coming from, the more we can grow in appreciation of each other. And I think this is one of the things that we're always saying, is that we need to have that ability, that tolerance isn't just allowing the other person to exist. Mm-hmm. It's actually being willing to say, maybe they have something to say to me. And if we go right back even to the Gospels and back particularly to the Old Testament, sometimes the wisest words, the words of prophecies, came from the most unlikely sources. Mm. And I think we have to keep this sense of being able to see, none of us know everything. None of us have a monopoly on truth. And we have to have that openness to the Lord through the most unlikely vehicles at times, saying something important to us. So if we keep that sense of searching for truth together, then the view that disagrees with me, if I'm searching for truth, either will strengthen my appreciation of truth as I overcome the obvious weakness of the other person's argument. But if I can't overcome the other person's argument, maybe it's correcting my argument. So I think, certainly, yes, my background is as a moral theologian. And one of the things that we've always had is the importance of conscience. But conscience as my search for truth. And in searching for truth, any help, support, corrections, ideas I'm offered by others, if I take them in the right spirit, can help me to a greater appreciation of truth.
If we appreciate that truth is a person of Jesus Christ,
yeah.
And that our Holy Father is such a great example of having spent so much time in prayer, obviously, and in his faith, that he is very open to the discussions, because he knows truth, because he knows the person of Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that you've hit, the thing is that we're often saying here, very often part of the work at the church is taking some initiative in the digital arena. We bring in people who are specialists in new media, and that's very important in a lot. But what we always have to get across to them, our message is not simply a written down message, it's an encounter with a person, it's an encounter with Christ. The Pope does this wonderfully by inviting people to encounter Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's his testimony in his books, etc. Because what's been wonderful about this Pope, this is a man who theologically could write something that most of us would not be able to understand. And certainly as a student, I remember reading some of Ratzinger's more heavily theological works, and they were challenging. But he also is a person who can change gear, and when he's talking to a wider audience, has this ability to say, this is the passion in my life, this is the person that I love and that I want you to know, and that I want you to know in the same loving way. And that's been one of the great things about Benedict. And in fact, the thing of Benedict sometimes is there are those great homilies in that, but sometimes it's the little asides, it's the little half comments. Every year he goes up to Castel Gandolfo during the summer, and there usually there's a meeting with the priests of that area, which is much less structured. He's talking a little bit off the cuff, and there's an ease in his communication there. But what's always palpable is this wonderful realistic sense of where we are, and yet this absolute conviction of the good news of Christ and a desire to share that with others.
In the gathering with the bloggers here in Rome following the beatification of John Paul, do you feel that there might be the opportunity for the more local experience for bloggers to encounter their own bishops, their own offices?
We've done what we've done, and we had no agenda. Mm-hmm. It came from an intuition of the Pontifical Council of Culture that it'd be worth doing something with bloggers when they were here for the beatification. We had been thinking of doing something that would start more from the base up, and then that might lead to such a meeting. Mm-hmm. This was great, it launched it, and it launched a discussion. Now, in many ways, it's up to people to see where they want to go with this. So some bloggers in Britain, for example, are looking at the possibility of establishing a guild or a collective of Catholic bloggers that will meet and have mass now and again. And they've approached their local bishops to see if they'd be interested in dialoguing with that. Mm-hmm. A lot of that will depend from place to place. And I've no doubt some bishops will say, yeah, I could do this. Other bishops would say, in the particular circumstance at the moment, this wouldn't be so easy. And we don't, they're the ones, they're the experts on their own local territories. But I think what maybe the fact that we initiated and took this thing yesterday, we said, well, it's doable. Mm-hmm. And that there is a value in getting the people together. And it's also, I think for me, the big thing yesterday was all about putting faces on names. Putting faces on blog sites. And that was fascinating. And I think could be a well worthwhile thinking in the context of World Communications Day, which is celebrated every year. This year, I think in early June, maybe a thing in some areas would be to look at either bloggers themselves who self-describe as Catholic bloggers, taking some initiative to gather and inviting local church representatives, or in some cases it might be the church local church representatives will take that initiative. But there's certainly, I think there's value in people thinking about how, in their culture or context, they can best take the thing forward. And that's one thing that's also is interesting, that when we talk about this digital culture is always located in specific cultures. And therefore, we'd be very much encouraging people to take the initiatives that are appropriate in your context. Mm. And we leave that to people there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have enough to do here ourselves without telling anybody else what they should be doing. Yeah.
Well, I think the encouragement and the recognition did very much on the local level as well, because maybe now there will be an enthusiasm from diocesan offices to reach out because you've set the example.
Yeah, please God, hopefully. Yeah. Yes.
In the discussion, Father Lombardi brought up a challenge to reflect on. There are two areas. First, the ego, which we just spoke on, about the disposition of those who enter into this. But he also mentioned service, that reflecting on that. And I think in the blogosphere in particular, and on the internet, there is becoming a distinction between those who find a need to monetize potentially, and are truly the entrepreneur trying to build a profession, and those who deem it as ministerial service.
Yeah, and they don't necessarily exclude each other. Mm. As in, there could be somebody who provides a very good service and also needs to find a way of keeping that going and needs some way of finding support for that, particularly if they're not blogging from an institutional perspective. Mm-hmm. I suppose that's an issue you leave supremely to the conscience of the people who are involved. Mm-hmm. And I think what Father Lombardi wanted to say is the very fact maybe of having the energy to start deciding to write a blog means you have a certain conviction about your own ideas, which is coming from ego, which is not all bad. But equally, the thing you want to say, you put that in service of a message of Christ and the message of the Church. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes, you know, I always say on this area, and I think it's an important one, it's easier to put brakes on people than it is to make them start. So if here you have people who are doing things and getting out there and trying different things, that can be refined, that energy can be harnessed. Mm-hmm. Maybe what we're not thinking about as much is those people who never express opinion, who never actually raise their head to speak about the Church and their life and their faith. So in some ways, with the bloggers, I think, you know, there can be a sense in which you say it is a very interesting world. It's very unlike the type of world we're used to here in our daily work in the Vatican, which is quite a hierarchical world and all the rest of it, with a lot of emphasis on respect, on demeanour, deportment, etc. It's a world full of enthusiasts. It's a world where, in many cases, that enthusiasm comes from an initial desire to share good news. What I suppose we want to invite everybody, and it's for all of us, we have to keep asking, am I sure that I'm keeping my motives pure? Am I sure that I'm doing this for the best reasons? Am I sure that in the end this isn't just about me, that it's ultimately about inviting a person to a relationship with the Lord? Mm-hmm. But that's been a dilemma for people from the earliest times.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Just Chris, before leaving, I'd just like to thank you for being here with us. I would like to offer my blessing for your work and for the work of your fellow professionals, but also for all those who are listening, that the Lord will strengthen them, that they will know the Lord's closeness to them. And we pray as a Christian community, we can all find different ways of expressing God's love for others so that all people know of his love, of his care, of his great invitation to us to be a people of love. And I ask God to bless us all in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
With Monsignor Paul Tai, we've been going inside the workings of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, a dicastery of the Roman Curia. To learn more about the work of the Council, visit vatican.va. To hear and download this discussion along with many others, visit www.insidethepages.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.